I should begin, maybe I shouldn't, but I will, with a complaint. That is to say, I think that to ask me, a man with a 3-year-old son and an upcoming toddler in the house, to spend a week preparing to speak on the topic of God's patience violates the constitutional prohibition of cruel and unusual punishment. Even this afternoon, as I put some of the final polish on the sermon, in between losing my patience with my son, I was reminded of the difficulty of the matter at hand. We've been working, in some sense, through Pink's outline of the attributes of God. And with respect to the topic of God's patience, I'm not going to emphasize the particular thing that he emphasizes. I will mention it as it ought to be said. But I am going to actually draw out something that he just mentions in passing that I think can be a very helpful tool for us to organize our thoughts around this issue. At some point in that chapter, Pink very briefly points out kind of a threefold approach to thinking about God's patience. First, that God is the author and object of patience. Second, that God himself is patient. And third, that God's patience is an example for us. And I think that's a very helpful framework for us to consider this topic. God is the author and the object of patience. What that means is that the concept itself, the very idea of patience, must flow from him, and everywhere it exists, it must reflect him. It must refer to him. We could say that of every attribute of this world. That is, every attribute in this world is either of God in this sense, that he is both the author and the object, or it is opposed to God. That is, it belongs in the category of the cursed and the sinful of this world. And though we struggle to have patience, we know when we see it that patience is a good thing, and that patience does come from God. When we speak of God's patience, though, we deal with something that can be rather hard to pin down or hard to define. That is, how is patience any different from God's mercy? How is patience any different from God being long-suffering? What about the 14 times in Scripture where it refers to God as being slow to anger? Like Numbers 14, the Lord is slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. Is that not speaking of his patience? Well, it is, in a sense. It is in part. In verses like that, you often see God's patience connected with his covenant faithfulness. That is, God would be justified to do this thing, but because he remembers his covenant, because he is patient with his covenant children, he won't do that. He'll do something else instead. In practice, then, patience is often connected to mercy. But I think patience, at least when referring to God, and perhaps when referring to us as well, is better described as being self-control. Or at least describing patience in terms of self-control. Because particularly what patience is having self-control with those who are sinful and those who are weak. That is, when we're being patient, we're exercising self-control with someone who has sinned or with someone who is displaying weakness. And when we speak of God's patience, this is exactly what he is doing. He is displaying self-control with respect to the weaknesses and the sins present in his creatures. It's God's self-restraint. It's his voluntary restraint which allows his actions to be free responses of his will, and not just the uncalculated responses of his attribute. Let me explain that more clearly, because that's important. As an example, God is holy. And so we would expect that everything that God does would be a reflection of his holiness. Well, when you encounter sin, Say you create a creature, and that creature rebels against you, and rather than magnifying your holiness, that creature magnifies sinfulness. What is the immediately holy response to that? Well, it's to destroy them. It's to wipe them off the face of the earth. It's to end their existence. That's what God would do if God were simply a calculator of attributes. And when you type in sin and holiness, God would simply respond the way holiness responds to sin. And so there would be immediate destruction. But when we say that God is patient, we're saying that God voluntarily restrains His own will, restrains His attributes. He wants to, in order to do something else. And so His holiness does not mechanically control His actions. God will still do what is holy. And what He does, instead of destroying in that moment, will still be holy. But He's not mechanically controlled by holiness. God has a free choice to do what He wants to do. He's not bound by His characteristics. Pink says that God has no less power over Himself than over His creatures. That'd be a peculiar thing, wouldn't it? If God was able to control us as an exercise of His power, and yet God couldn't control Himself, God's holiness would get out in front of Him and cause Him to do something that He otherwise wouldn't have wanted to do. God is the author and the object of patience. He made it. And all patience that exists in this world is a reflection of Him. That brings us to our second point, that God Himself is a patient being. We don't mean this just in His being, but in His behavior. God acts in ways that demonstrate patience. The Bible points out two clear categories of God's patience. The first is in His wrath against evil. God does not punish every sin the moment it occurs. God does not punish sin at the first opportunity to punishment. God has not brought His judgment against sin into the world the first opportunity, the first chance that He had to do this. And this is pointed out several times in the New Testament. It's in 1 Peter where Peter makes the point about how God was patient with people in the days of Noah. And you say, patient in the days of Noah? He sent a flood and wiped them out. And Peter says, He didn't do that the first moment He noticed they were sinful. He delayed. He told Noah to build this giant boat, and while He was building it, He told Noah to preach the gospel to the captives. These people are slaves to their sin, Noah. Preach them the gospel. And for what we imagine as probably being around 18 months, this is what Noah did. He preached the gospel. And they did not hear, and God did bring His judgment, but you certainly could not say that God failed to be patient. In the book of Acts, it talks about how patient God was with Israel in the wilderness. You remember that 40-year detour? Where rather than God stripping away the promise of the land entirely from their disobedience, He merely allowed that generation to perish. He kept His promise to a future generation. And even though Israel had been unfaithful, even though Israel had many times been faithless, as, don't forget, manna is falling from heaven to feed them, as they exercise their faithlessness, God is yet patient with them. Consider today, how much evil does God tolerate today? You think about what the world has done. The world has made sacrilege primetime television entertainment. The world has made profaning things that are holy fair game for newspaper cartoons. The Lord is greatly patient with wickedness. That patience will run out, not in the sense that our patience runs out and we lose our temper, but that He will determine that His patience will no longer restrain His holiness, that He's going to come in judgment. But to this point, broadly speaking, all the world has ever seen on the issue of evil, except on the cross of Christ, is the patience of God. But there's another kind of patience here. And this is where I think we're going to stray away from what Pink writes in his book a little bit, because he doesn't bring this up, and I think this is actually one of the more important, or at least the more impressive, of the ways that God is patient with us. It's one thing to see and to be impressed by the fact that God in His holiness is able to be patient about punishing wrongdoing, about punishing evil. And we look at that and we say, well, that's a very nice thing for God to do. We do that too sometimes, where somebody deserves something bad and we wait. We don't give them something bad and we think we have a counterpart to what God has done. But there's another example in the Scripture of God's great patience with us. And that is this. He did not despise our weakness. He did not despise our sinfulness. He did not lose it with us, so to speak, write us off, consider us a total loss, and instead He showed mercy. Think about the human counterpoint to this. How do we behave when someone shows themselves to be weak? Well, we despise their weakness. They're a hassle. They're an inconvenience. If they can't do anything for themselves, what would we do for them? We tend to be, in fact, less patient with the weak. Less patient with those who cannot do for themselves the things we think they ought to. Now, take that back to God looking at us. What would you say if you had created a man and you had blessed that man with immeasurable blessings and given them every opportunity to enjoy eternal fellowship with you, and that man had rebelled against you in such a cataclysmic way that he was now unable to save himself? You were the thing that he needed most, and he was unable to return to you. Forgiveness was the thing that was needed, and he was unable to seek it, much less to grant it to himself. What a pathetic creature this is. This creature can do nothing for himself. I gave him every benefit in the world, and he's put himself in a position of worthlessness. And yet God is patient. And God did not look at us and say, what a worthless and useless creature. God said, I will change their heart. I will draw faith out from them, and I will give them time to work out that salvation with fear and trembling. God could have written us off. God could have said, He's done with us. God could have said, I've been patient enough by not destroying them in a moment's notice. But He did more than this. He took the thing that was weak, the very kind of thing that we are prone to despising, and in an act of patience, He showed us mercy. And so He redeemed us. God is patient with His own people, as patient as He is with evildoers. Finally, God's patience is, in fact, an example to us. The world holds God's patience in contempt. It sees self-restraint as weakness, and weakness is to be despised. Haven't you heard someone ask, what kind of God allows this sort of evil to continue in the world? Haven't you heard someone ask, what is God doing about all this? Maybe you've asked that yourself. Allow me to paraphrase that question for you into a more honest expression of your heart. The question should really be worded, what kind of God isn't as enraged at injustice as I am? What kind of God doesn't see the wrongness of this world the way I do? Now, I suggest you rephrase it because you can see that the rephrased question is absolutely ridiculous. God sees this world far clearer than you ever have. And yet God is patient. The world hates it when patience is reflected in us. Haven't you been in that conversation where you explain to someone, perhaps because you're complaining or perhaps just because you want to bend a listening ear, you explain to them some difficulty that you're having with another person and how you're trying to be patient, how you're trying to do what's right. And instead of being met with encouragement, they say things to you like, "I don't see how you put up with that." Or, "I would make them pay for doing that to me." The world hates patience. The world hates it when we're patient in response to weakness. The world hates it when we're patient in response to sin. And yet we have for ourselves this example of God's patience. What about these sins committed against God? Well, because of His example, we don't follow the eye for an eye principle on a personal level. We don't speak in terms of, "I'll make them pay for what they did to me." We don't seek immediate redress for sin. You know, this comes up a lot when I've done marriage counseling before, and couples talk to me about how much they argue and how the arguments generally spiral out of control. They start about something so small, and then the argument itself becomes a bigger problem than whatever the first issue was. And one of the things that I've taught about marriage and that I've learned in books and in experience is that one of the most helpful things we can do when someone has sinned against us in marriage is simply to wait. Just wait and see if they see it themselves. Just wait and see if they come to the recognition themselves that what they've done is wrong. Because if you'll just wait, if you'll show that patience and not seek that it immediately be made right, not seek immediate justice, not seek an immediate mark on your ledger on the marriage scorecard, often God rewards that patience. When dealing with others, there's great benefit to being patient with sin rather than seeking an immediate remedy. But God's not just patient with sin. God's also patient with weakness, and we ought to be as well. This is perhaps the most dominant theme in instructing us in how we live together in families. Have you ever thought about the connecting thread between the instructions the Bible gives to husbands and wives and children? I think it's this theme of patience. 1 Peter 3, it says that husbands are to live with their wives in an understanding way, giving honor to them as a weaker vessel. That is, husbands are to be patient in weakness. Colossians 3:18, wives are told, "Submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord." And that's key, and that's actually part of the discussion that has to be made to convince women to buy this, is that you have to say, you see what he's saying here is not submit to your husbands because they're right. You notice the Bible doesn't say that anywhere? It doesn't say submit to your husbands because they've earned it, because they deserve it. It simply says, as is fitting in the Lord. What does that mean? Well, it means that the Lord is patient with weakness. The Lord knows what it is to look at someone who's supposed to do what's right and to see them do wrong. And He's patient. What about the command to children in Ephesians 6? Obey your parents in the Lord. And how does it conclude? For this is right. It doesn't say obey your parents because they're perfect. It doesn't say obey your parents because they get it right more than they get it wrong. Maybe they don't. One of the things, children, that you will learn if you become parents is that there is a great deal of insecurity that comes along with being a parent. We look like we know what we're doing, and we look like we're sure of ourselves. And then we go back into our rooms, moms and dads by themselves, and we say, "What have we gotten ourselves into?" What God calls us to, each with one another, husbands and wives and children and parents, is patience. Not because people are strong, but precisely because they're weak. We're patient with people who make mistakes. We're patient with one another. The driving force for obedience is not the perfection of the one in charge. It's the rightness of the thing before the Lord. And it requires patience because we are all imperfect. We're imperfect husbands, you are imperfect wives, and you are imperfect children. And we have to be patient with imperfect husbands and imperfect wives and imperfect children. And this is precisely why Jesus' example is so valuable. We can get ourselves into a bit of a trap here. When we consider the reasons that we should be merciful or the reasons that we should be gracious, we're always very quick to say things like, well, I should be merciful because I'm a sinner too. Or I should be gracious because I could be wrong too. But what happens if you really cut through that and you deal with the specific situation? In this one moment, you're not the sinner, you're the one in the right. In this one moment, you're not the one who's wrong, you're the one who's correct. You're not the one who's weak, you're the one who's strong. What will you say in this one moment where you are in the right and they are in the wrong? What is your rationale then for being patient? Well, it's because Jesus was too. If we ever ask ourselves, it's easy to be patient when I'm unsure about my position, but why would I be patient when I'm actually the one who's right? Because that does happen every now and then. We're right. Well, the answer is because God is patient with me and He's always actually right. He's never walking that fuzzy line of could be right, could be wrong. He's always right, and He's always 100% certain that He's right. And standing before Him in our sin, we're always wrong, and He's 100% certain that we're wrong, and yet, patience. Patience with us. He did not despise my weakness and my sin. He saved me out of them. In the moment when He could have brought His wrath against sin immediately, in His patience, He restrained. And in the next moment, when He could have written me off as someone that He had already graciously spared, and yet look at my pathetic weakness, and yet He redeemed. It's easy to say that the application from this is that we all ought to be more patient. And we should. We should be patient with one another. We should be patient with our enemies. We should be patient with God as we await for His coming. We see the injustice too, and it drives us crazy. When will this end? We should be more patient. But I don't believe that's the essential application from the study of this doctrine. I think the essential application is to be stunned in the learning of it. That God would be so utterly different than our instincts. When everything in us calls out to get our own way. Everything in us calls us to have it now, to have justice now, to have truth now. The holy God of the universe, in whom there is no darkness, in whom there's no hedging, in whom there's no uncertainty, and in whom there is no chance for error, the holy God of the universe waits. He looks at us in our sin and our weakness, and He waits. And at this, we ought to be stunned.